Welcome to the Closing Market Report. It's June the 16th, 2006. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzolo of Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana. And later in the half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with Bruce Bostard. He's the manager of the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company out of Ludlow, Illinois. Dave Dickey will be along in just a few moments to take a complete look at the agricultural news for the afternoon. And then, because I'm in summertime mode today, I pulled an older story, but this one's a good one, all about the Grain Elevator Museum in Atlanta, Illinois. I hope it gets you in the mood to make a little trip across the state of Illinois for the weekend to visit this magnificent facility. Stay with us this afternoon. We hope you have a good time during this edition of AM 580's Closing Market Report.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming on AM 580 as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists, on the web at a6395.com and at agrigold.com.
Let's take a look at the numbers very quickly and see what happened there. July futures in Kansas City at 462.5 for the wheat. They were off a penny and a half. July at 359, we're off 2.5 today in Chicago. September's were up a quarter at 376 and three quarters. July corn at 235.5, up 2.5. September's 247, up 2.5. And Dease contract at 261 and a quarter, up 2.75. March futures 272 and a quarter. They were up 3 on the day. July soybean $6 and a quarter, up 7.75 today. August contract 606.5. They were up 7. September 613.5, up 7.25. And the November beans at 627. They were up 6.5 cents for the day. Bean meal finished July at 180.90. They were up $1.80. And July at 24.86. They were up 0.04 for the day. Feeder cattle August contract at the Mercantile Exchange 112.57.5, up 22.5 cents. June live cattle at 81.65. They were up 70. And the July lean hogs at $75.47.5. They were up 7.5 for the day.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Hey, Mike, I have to run, make sure that everybody knows that I work for U of I Extension and not for the radio station after a start like that, huh?
Well, that's all right. That's the way it goes in the summertime.
Oh, you know, it's hot out. It's summertime mode. We were talking before we went on the air. I got lots of dry and, dead grass in my yard. Oh, wait a second. As I told you before, that's the Roundup that I kind of misplaced while I was out there, isn't it?
We tend to do that. We tend to overspray. We don't think we got that spot, so we hit it 5 or 6 times, don't we?
Yeah, we do. Hey, I got a question for you. Dave Dickey and I were talking a bit earlier about dead cat bounces, what they might be, how to define them, and if what's been happening in the bean market might be a dead cat bounce at this point.
It could be, but it seemed like a playbook, a page out of the playbook from last week, and especially last Friday from our standpoint, Todd, because they're still talking smaller acres, they're still talking the Informa numbers, and they're still talking the funds weren't super long like they were in the corn and wheat. So you don't have a lot of new information out there. I guess one thing that could be a possibility is that we did see a recovery in the metals market, a sharp recovery in the gold market, as a matter of fact, with the dollar then taking a little bit of a plunge. That might have helped some of the case for the beans. But, you know, it's going to be very interesting today for us to see where the non-commercials are sitting on today's commitment of traders data for beans, meal, and oil, because the question we have is, have they built a net long position? And if they have, will traders view that as somewhat negatively because they dumped around, I guess they added about 17,800 contracts last week to put them net short only 13,000. So will they have gone net long after this week? And I did some price studies before we went on the air, and you know, on March 30th, the day of the report, no beans were at 615.5. Today at 627, we're up 11.5 cents in since March 30th, and 6.5 of that was made today. So it's just a range-bound, dead-type market. Is it a dead cat bounce? Probably, with some technicals underneath it.
And then if that's the case, we're range-bound at the moment, but what's the downside potential?
Well, we talked about that a little bit this morning. I mean, both technically and fundamentally, we could build a pretty strong case and argument to our clients and producers that if we would take out $6.35 on the upside or take out $6 on the downside, then the move and the follow-through in the same direction would be and probably could be around 50 to 70 cents for November beans. And so if you're looking at $6.30, you could go up to maybe, you know, the 680 the $7 mark. If you're talking about $6, then you're looking at $5.50 to $5.30 as far as downside. And obviously, we're talking about a trend that would be present all the way into August when we get back into the weather market for the beans. So there's a lot of ifs, ands, or buts there, but we, like I said, we can make a pretty strong case either way, given both fundamentals and technicals that are out there right now.
And either of those moves would not be typically outside of the range of what happens seasonally in this marketplace.
No, not at all. In fact, we got a call from a client in Pontiac this morning, and he gave us some bean cash prices, and he was about $1.10 underneath current fall delivery price for no beans, about $1.10 under where he was last year at this time. And last year at this time is kind of a neat time because that's when we had not gotten the rains in Illinois, and it was very droughty in Illinois, and the market was very, very excitable. And so we're dealing with a market that's kind of in the same predicament and with a big, big drop in corn predicted by USDA. So to us, the cash bean market is at fair value, but the futures market seems like it needs to take a direction one way or the other.
Just for an FYI, on the weekly charts, the nearby July beans were off 14.5 cents from last Friday. The Noves were off 11 in the corn pit. They were off 6.5 for both the Julys and the December. Which of the two pits concerns you more?
Oh, no question the beans, because we really do have a strong bias that the corn market is pricing in bigger acres. And it seems to us the futures traders are giving the every benefit of the doubt to the beans right now as far as why they don't want to sell them, whereas they are trying to really talk down corn as much as they possibly can. And obviously some of that association is the wheat market and the fact that we're in wheat harvest. But then again, we talked to the KC pits before the close today, and they're looking at 50 to 55% on the harvest progress in the HRW category on Monday's USDA report. So we're going to jump over, we think, that halfway point and hard red winter harvest, and that usually starts to abate some of this harvest pressure, and maybe this will be one of the last harvest Fridays we have where the wheat, you know, continues to sell off.
Let me take you back to the bean pit, and can you pull up in your ProfitX a chart, a long-term continuation chart? Do you have something like a 30-year that you can take a look at and the long-term continuation chart? David Dickey and I were looking at that one before we came on the air and thinking about how the funds might look at this marketplace. So for those of you who can't visualize, can't see this, I'll try to explain what it looks like. If you look at the marketplace, I think it runs from a trade of about 530 to 720 over the 30-year period, 40-year, 30-year period from the 70s, from the early 70s to now, with peaks well above that 720 range, but most of the trade is in that $2 range in there from 520, 530 to 720.
Right.
And we're on the bottom end of that at this point. Is that why the funds, if you're a guy that doesn't really know about the fundamentals, but you just take a look at that, is this possibly one of the reasons the funds just look at this marketplace and say, well, this is cheap enough. We ought to keep buying beans at this level?
Yeah, there are groups of funds out there that will go after more of a value level analysis as opposed to sheer technicals or sheer fundamentals. And so there is a good group of people out there that are most likely looking at exactly that and saying, what's my risk if I buy it? What's my risk if I sell it? And that's where it goes back to there's enough issues and cases to be built when they build upon the technicals that you just outlined that, you know, you could see 80 cents to a dollar higher and you could see 80 cents to a dollar lower. I think that's where it goes back to, okay, so what do you do with that?
That's right.
Do you sit there and just let it all unfold and take the risk on either side if you're a producer? And our mindset is absolutely not. The stakes are too high, especially given where we're at in terms of the last 5 years in our prices, given our carryover levels, and no fundamental justification from a U.S. stock supply-demand number, you know, cruncher mindset to go ahead and just sit back and take a you know casual look at. That's where the puts to us are the perfect scenario so that you can, you know, participate. If you are on the low end of the range and we just happen to rally the next 6 months, you're going to be there for that rally. But I think the bottom line is the producer has to sit there and say, do I see LDP and beans this fall or not? And history would suggest, yes, you're going to, given the world and U.S. carryover levels, that at some point in time, the fundamentals will come home to roost.
Do you see LDP in corn now that you broach that subject?
We still don't. No, we think the basis levels, if anything, are probably peaking right now in terms of the whitest they can get are happening right now because we have a general mindset, especially as you get closer to the Illinois River, that the commercials have fought the fund rally as much as they possibly have been able to, and they've done that with widening the basis as much as they possibly been able to. But, you know, something Greg Johnson from the Anderson said on Commodity Week last week really stuck in me, because I respect his opinion, number one, and two, is a big issue for us, is that at some point the commercials are going to go from a 2 billion bushel carryover and pricing that into a 1 billion bushel carryover in the cash market, and if the USDA keeps these numbers the way they have them, and there's something that's going to have to happen. And we talked to an Iowa client today, and he was at a 40 under or 55 under, something crazy like that in Iowa for fall delivery. If you jump to January 07, Todd, or February of 07, his basis improved 40 cents in a 1 or 2 month time period. I think we're starting to see that right now, where we're kind of seeing what Greg is talking about, that at some point in time, there's not enough there to really fill the pipeline of the demand if USDA is really serious about a 1 billion bushel carryover.
Yeah, and the real guess is to decide when that demand actually kicks in from
you
those
bet.
Ethanol
and so,
plants.
And so it goes back to, is the LDP going to be present right before we get in the combines and then slowly, you know, leak out and go to zero by the time we start harvesting, or will we have a shot at it because we'll have a lot of bushels come at once from 05 and 06? And that's where the basis comes back and the futures comes back.
We appreciate you being with us today.
Thanks, Todd.
And that's Mike Zuzlo with Risk Management Commodities Incorporated out of Lafayette, Indiana.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from First Midwest Bank, serving the banking needs of Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Mike Morris in McHenry at 815-344-7213. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
This is the Closing Market Report. I'm Todd Gleason. Here's Dave Dickey with today's Ag News.
In agricultural news, Mexico is threatening to institute an ad valorem duty on U.S. imports of high-fructose corn syrup in conjunction with lifting a 20% tax on beverages made with high fructose. A WTO ruling in March ruled the tax illegal. Officials at the U.S. Corn Refiners Association say the new duty could be as high as 210%, making it just as prohibitive as the illegal tax. A new coalition is asking the federal government to buy more bio-based products. Jonna Miller is with the American Farm Bureau Federation, and she has this report.
A new group is pushing the federal government to flex its $400 billion buying power by purchasing more homegrown bio-based products. The coalition is called the Alliance for a Bio-Based Economy and includes the American Farm Bureau Federation and other agricultural, environmental, and consumer groups.
These products can include corn-based fabrics to soy-based hydraulic fluids and carpeting backing, and they really represent a tremendous new market for the U.S. agriculture commodities.
American Farm Bureau Renewable Fuels Specialist Ann Steckel says use of bio-based products will boost demand for agricultural products and lessen the need for petroleum-based products.
So instead of relying on people across the world, we're relying on people domestically, our corn and soybean farmers. And doing so really benefits our national security and also benefits the environment because we're using natural products.
Iowa Senator Tom Harkin co-authored bio-based provisions in the 2002 Farm Bill, and the Alliance hopes to work with Congress to promote the products even more.
Bio-based products are good for energy security, great for the environment, and good for national security. It's great for rural economies.
Jonna Miller, Washington.
Following a ceremony to swear in Susan Schwab as the new U.S. Trade Representative, President Bush warned of trouble in the Doha round of WTO negotiations. In fact, according to the president, and these are his words, it's tough sledding right now. He went on to say that national interests appear to be more important than reducing barriers and tariffs across the globe. Marion County, Florida, in the southeastern part of the state, is the first location in the U.S. this year with soybean rust on soybean sentinel plants. USDA made the announcement Thursday. Could the Great Lakes become home to wind energy farms? Experts tackled that question this week at a conference in Madison, Wisconsin. Sean Ali reports.
Wind turbines have to go somewhere, but few people want them in their backyards. So conference organizers said the spacious Great Lakes might be worth a look. Government data show they're flush with wind, but Chicago area engineer Larry Hollish says there's another plus. Power-hungry cities are closer to Great Lakes than rural wind farms.
For example, if you were to do it offshore here in Chicago, you could bring it to shore at any of the transformer and substations and deliver power less expensively to the city.
But some conference goers said lake turbines are not an environmental slam dunk. Millions of birds migrate over the Great Lakes, and critics worry many of them will smack into propellers. Government scientists will take up that issue in Ohio later this month. I'm Sean Ali.
And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey, of course, your director of agricultural programming here at the WILL radio stations. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week. Speaking of that program, Steve Freed of ADM will be our guest this week. Be sure to tune in tomorrow morning at 11:30 Central Time, right here on AM 580. If you can't wait, you can always pick it up off our website at willag.org. Should be posted by about 6 o'clock this evening. Well, up next, in 1904, a grain elevator was built in the town of Atlanta, Illinois. It was closed in the mid-70s, and in the early 90s, a few of the townsfolks there decided to save that aging building, and now it is on the Registry of Historical Places in the United States. I prepared this tour of the J.H. Hawes Grain Elevator and Museum with Marge and James Coleman.
The engine came from the Eminence Grain and Coal Company, which is about 3.5-4 miles out of town. And it was restored by Dean May. And he put it back in really wonderful condition. And that's how it got here. Volunteer work has gone in. The bricks in the engine building were all cleaned by volunteers in the cold old days. And we've had a lot of people volunteer their help on laying bricks and carrying mortar and fixing windows, and we have tried to keep it as historically as possible.
Well, I guess we might say it's just we enjoy showing people how it used to be done. I can't say primitive way, but somewhere between primitive and modern day, it was done through houses like this. Well, they stopped on the scale platform with the load originally, and then after they weighed and cleared the scale house, they'd drive on up in here and stop on the dump logs, and they'd trip it and run the load down in the pit. End of the leg, up in the bend.
The scales came from out in the country, and I was just riding my bike in the morning downtown, and there were four people walking around, and I had a feeling they had been from here, and I stopped and visited with them. Make a long story short, we came over in the afternoon, and the scales in the scale house was from a farm out in the country, and they didn't know their dad very well because their parents had divorced. And when they looked down in the scales, there was their dad's name with grain that he had brought to that farmer, and he kept all the list of grain and the weights. And I soon saw tears in their eyes. City Hall and the library, when they're open, you can always get someone there to call one of us who have a key to open it and show you around. It's always open during June, July, and August on Sunday afternoons from 1 to 3. But if anybody comes through, most people in town know who to call and get the elevator open. And I ride my bike around a lot, and I've gone home and gotten the key many a time, brought people down here, and I've had a wonderful time showing the elevator.
Here are a few fun facts about the machinery in the J.H. Hawes Grain Elevator Museum. That old gas engine that operates the elevator runs at 400 RPM and puts out about 10 horsepower. The pulley system inside the building is driven by a single rope. It's 280 feet long. And the total capacity of the elevator, 29,000 bushels.
The Carl Center for Rural Health and Farm Safety, a division of Carl Foundation Hospital, is proud to underwrite agricultural programming at WILL. The center helps residents of rural communities with education and training in farm safety. For more information, call 217-383-4606.
Joining us on this Friday afternoon for our look at the cash grain market is Bruce Foster to the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company out of Ludlow, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Bruce.
Good afternoon.
Farmers busy there yet doing some work in the fields?
Some work in the field. You know, we're probably a week or two slower than, say, over towards the Springfield area, the south of Champaign area, so the corn isn't quite as tall. There's been, a little bit of replanting going on, maybe the very tail end of some of the beans. There's been a lot of hay being made. Won't be too long before we start seeing some wheat come in.
Absolutely. Tell me a little bit about the basis in your area.
Mixed bag. The rail basis has been fairly steady, acting like the front end might want to perk up just a little bit. Processor numbers have been coming back pretty decently. I think Decatur numbers a week ago were about 11 under. They were 2 under last night, so we've seen a 9-cent gain on the nearbys, 2-cent pickup out in the fall months. Beans just dead steady there, very little going on. Gulf-wise, kind of the same thing as what we saw. SIF numbers on corn, 3 cents better, and beans down 3 cents over the course of the week.
So am I right over the week in the nearbys that you really haven't lost any ground despite the losses in Chicago?
On the corn side, no. We haven't lost any ground, and we've seen some selected markets picking up a little bit. You know, with the losses in Chicago and the lower flat price numbers, cash movement has just really dried up on the nearby. So I think that's seeing the processor numbers improve a little bit.
Your guess, if you're hearing from farmers about what the end of June acreage report might show?
I guess my guess would be we probably have a little bit more corn planted than what was initially expected, not a huge number. I don't know how much of that is a switch or a change. I think it's more what they had planted or planned to plant all along.
And then your bids for the day, please.
We are at 218 at Paxton on nearby corn and 577 on soybeans.
We appreciate you being with us.
Thank you.
Bruce Bostard is the manager at the Ludlow Co-op Elevator in Ludlow, Illinois. In 2 minutes, we'll take a look at the agriculture weather forecast. Your regional newscast comes up right now.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Jim Meadows. Ameren Electric customers in Illinois could get a slight reprieve in the impending increase in their utility rates. Ameren is proposing a gradual increase in rates over the next decade, starting in January, when a 10-year freeze on residential electric rates is lifted. Under the deal, customers would initially pay less than the actual cost of receiving power, but Ameren would recoup the difference in later years as a charge on customers' bills. ComEd is making a similar proposal, and both plans would need legislative approval. A Terre Haute, Indiana man has been formally charged with murder in the fatal stabbing of his 4-year-old son and attempted murder in the attack of his 2-year-old son. 33-year-old Katron Walker made his first appearance in Vigo County Court this morning. A former Monroe County, Indiana council member isn't giving up on his battle over a 2002 drunken driving arrest. Scott Wells claims the arrest was a political setup. The state appellate court has rejected his appeal, but Wells' attorney says he'll go to the Indiana Supreme Court. Police who've been lobbying for the release of a report on allegations that Chicago police tortured suspects are going to have to wait a little longer. A Cook County judge today set a June 30th hearing to discuss the report's release because he wants to give the Illinois Supreme Court time to act on a former prosecutor's appeal. Students who have been accepted to Southern Illinois University at Edwardsville are out of luck for this fall if they haven't yet told the school they plan to attend. SIUE says it has no more room due to an unprecedented amount of interest from students. SIUE this fall will have about 1,850 students in its freshman class. That's about 150 more than it was planning for. I'm Jim Meadows, AM 580 News.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 85 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
I'm Todd Gleason on a Friday afternoon. This is the Closing Market Report on AM 580 in Urbana. Joined now by Steve Hilberg, the director of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center here in Urbana-Champaign. Good afternoon to you, Steve.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Tell me about this hot weather we're having.
Well, it's unusual for this year, but not untypical for summertime here in Illinois and the Midwest. So we're just sort of getting back to where we should be this time of year. Temperatures today well up into the 80s, already hitting 90 in some spots, which is a few degrees above normal. Good news is the dew points haven't climbed real high yet. They're still in the low 60s or so, but we'll probably see that change this weekend as we get into a pretty good southerly flow and we get all that moisture in here.
In fact, I was looking at that. Some of the farmers in the area probably happy to see a little moisture come in. How much will we see?
Well, actually, I think we're going to see some pretty good coverage and some good amounts in spots over the next 2 days. I think the best chance for rain is going to be probably, for Illinois, is going to be on Sunday afternoon. We'll probably see some showers and thunderstorms tomorrow, especially in the northwestern half of the state. But statewide, it looks like possibly Sunday and then Monday in Indiana. But we could see some 1-inch plus amounts in the southeastern half of the state, a little bit less up to the northwest. But a lot of it depends on the timing of this weak front that's going to come through. And if it hangs up a little bit further north, northern Illinois could benefit from a lot. Over the next 5 days or so, estimates are now we could be seeing 1 to 2 inches of rain throughout most of Illinois and Indiana if we look through next weekend. And in fact, the whole central part of the country from Nebraska, the dry areas of Nebraska and Kansas, all the way through Indiana into Ohio, looks like it could get some significant amounts of rain over the next week.
If you could focus in on the southern part of the state just a bit for me, because you mentioned that they might be more likely to get a bit more rain than the rest of us. They've been fairly wet.
Yeah, there is a band there roughly, from just north of I-70 to south to just north of, just south of I-64 that's actually been fairly wet. But the extreme southern tip of the state into Missouri, southern Indiana, Arkansas, that whole area around Paducah has been a little bit drier than the rest of southern Illinois. But, yeah, that's probably the wettest part of the state right now in June is that southern band in that part of the state. And they could get some significantly. That looks like where the focus of the rainfall is probably going to be this weekend if that front hangs up over central or southern Illinois.
And finally, because you cover the Midwest, tell me about Iowa and the dry conditions there.
Yeah, it is very dry there. Rainfall so far in June now is less than 10% of normal in some parts of west central Iowa, although they did get some areas got some very good rain yesterday, probably a little bit too much, up to 6 inches in an area in northwestern Iowa. So that will help there, and it looks like the showers and thunderstorms over the next week or so will help improve things there.
Wow, 6 inches, that's a gully washer.
Yeah, there were some very slow-moving storms. They're very localized, though, so there are still some areas that are fairly dry.
We appreciate you being with us, Steve.
Okay, Todd.
Steve Hilberg is the director of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center at the Illinois State Water Survey here in Champaign County, Illinois. And that is today's Closing Market Report. Remember to tune in tomorrow morning for Commodity Week. That's at 11:30 Central Time. Our guest tomorrow, Steve Freed of ADM Investor Services. I'm Todd Gleason. You have a great afternoon.